this morning's sermon will be a team effort with Glenn and Mary Miller and myself. Maybe a little longer than you're used to, and so just relax. It'll be all right. It will end. And we will not be having Sunday school. We will move from here to outdoors for the wedding tree ceremony, and then you can have your coffee after that. This past week was difficult. Just name it. Usually by Thursday, I have pretty good progress on writing a sermon. But this past Thursday, I sat staring at a computer monitor, my fingers poised on the keyboard, praying for some inspiration, some motivation, some hope to replace this dark cloud of cynicism and foreboding. And I'll confess, I'm still in a bit of a post-election fog, even though Thursday then dawned bright and sunny. My spirit seemed to be stuck in weepy Wednesday. I was so glad, though, when I sat there staring at the computer monitor that I at least did not have to choose texts on which to preach. They were chosen for me by virtue of our following the lectionary, and so I reread these texts from Isaiah and Luke and asked myself, how do they speak to what has happened in our nation in the last few days, and how do they relate to our fall theme, which we've been focusing on since the middle of September, the divine kingdom, all in God's family. Well, these texts both, somehow, in kind of different ways, seem to suggest to me that God is about to do a new thing. Isaiah says it very dramatically. God is doing a new thing. And surely we all feel the need for newness. We need it in the worst way because we've tried all the old solutions, the former strategies, the former and previous programs. None seem to do much to change anything in any significant way. We know we need something fresh, something not yet thought of. And while some may have great hope for this transpired this past week as a sign of newness and change, others feel frightened as to what the changes might be. Some of those folks are within our Ohio or our own Franconia Conference congregations, particularly in South Philadelphia, where this morning my wife Mary, who is part of the executive committee of Franconia Mennonite Conference, and our own leadership minister Jennifer Erickson Morales are visiting four congregations in South Philadelphia as a presence, as a way of communicating to those congregations, many of whom their members are not documented and who are feeling great fear and trepidation, that we stand with them, whatever may come. We all know our nation and world faces massive challenges, and the despair we feel when we watch the evening news or pay attention to our various news feeds seem to pile on one intractable problem after another. And depending upon your source of news, the narratives regarding the problems and the solution to those problems often seem to be diametrically opposed and contradict each other. And we wonder, what is the way out? Most of us have been around for a number of election cycles and voted perhaps in or not voted in multiple elections. And while we may feel a sense of hope thinking that if we just give the present arrangement enough time, that things will turn around. Or we might think that, well, what's been told about the world isn't really as bad as what they say it is. Or the other narrative, that if we just throw the bums out of office, we'll get a new administration that will bring genuine transformation. So I find that with each cycle, my cynicism of the entire political process grows stronger, and I know this need for newness. Now, I think that I'm well aware, and probably all of us are well aware, that we've sipped the Kool-Aid of the logic that if something's going to happen, if there's going to be any real change, it will have to come from us, or it won't come at all. The self-help movement is massive and pervasive. If we're unhappy, if we're overweight, if we're stupid with computers, if we're stuck in our marriage, if we're whatever it is, there's a solution. There's a book. There's a computer program that can help you fix it. Help you fix it. So help yourselves. It's the wisdom of Dr. Phil who says, only you can cure what is wrong with you. And to a large extent, he's absolutely right. We do need to accept responsibility for being people of change and bring about change that begins right here. What's epidemic is the blaming of others for what is wrong with me, what's wrong with our communities, what's wrong with our world. But if we begin to open ourselves to the possibility that the change may need to happen within my own heart and soul, then perhaps there's some hope for change to begin here. But we also know the other reality is that we are creatures of habit. We get caught in ruts, and we may hope for some change. And I'm sure, Trina, you experience this all the time in wellness coaching, that we may hope for some change, but our good intentions never quite bring it about. We do what we do because it's just the way things are done. It's us. So my point is that newness, genuine change, is rare. The alleged new and improved model turns out to be just something, some variation of the same old thing. And not only that, as in Samsung Galaxy 7 smartphone, it may actually catch on fire and burn in your pocket. So where in the world do we get the change we need? Well, Isaiah 65 suggests that it does not come from us. The text here in Isaiah 65 is from the post-exilic poet who composed most of Isaiah 55 on through chapter 66. Some scholars call it the third Isaiah. We presume that what this third Isaiah or the poet is writing, who is writing to, is actually exiles who have returned from captivity in Babylon. And so they're home. And there's this initial euphoria because they're now back home again after years of captivity. But that euphoria quickly wears off. Because when they look around them, they see their homeland in ruins. It is nothing like they had imagined it was when they were in captivity. The homeland was in ruins. What was there to do? What were they to do? Where was their hope for the future? And where would be the newness? And the tone is set for us in the first verse read. For I am about to do a new thing. I am about to create. God, the same creator who created a new world out of chaos, speaks into the present chaos and moves again. In the new age God is bringing, there will be negatives, there will continue to be death, but there will also be hope. Something is dying, but something is being brought into being. The newness is not promised reward for present righteousness of the people. It's a pure gift of God. A God who promises to keep the covenant, to reach out to all God's kin, to redeem and transform not just the American political system, and heal the Republican-Democrat divide, or whatever divide you want to imagine, but a God who is bringing newness to the cosmos. And that vision is carried forth by the third Isaiah from the first Isaiah, who back in chapter 11 says, as we read in the prayer, the wolf shall live with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid. They will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And as we skip ahead to the gospel text from Luke's gospel, Jesus and his disciples are walking by the magnificent temple. And they get into this conversation about its beauty and permanence. Such huge, massive stones. And I reflect on Mary and I being there exactly a year ago, seeing those stones. And they are impressive. And they say, how can they ever not be there? Such huge stones, the disciples are admiring. Surely this massive structure will last forever, and that's our sentiment too. What we build, we believe, will endure. But Jesus tells his disciples that stone will be cast off stone, and the whole place will one day lie in rubble. And he's right. After just a few short years, Rome sacks Jerusalem and the temple is destroyed. And then the questions surely have to emerge and be present with the people. How did this happen? How could God allow this to happen? It was a bleak, dark day for Judaism. How could they be a people without a temple, without a physical temple? It was their icon. It gave them identity and meaning. And what were they to do now? How could they go on? They face change. The people of first century Palestine were going through this seismic shift after this great earthquake of the destruction of the temple. And the immediate response had to be, we must rebuild this temple. It's a response that change theorist Ronald Heifetz calls technical change. With technical change, when there's a problem, immediately you go find a solution and then you apply the solution to the problem and it's fixed. End the problem. It's gone. You have a problem with immigration? Problem? You look for a solution, build a wall, end the problem. But the problem with the temple being destroyed and the problem with our immigration policy being broken is that these are not technical problems. They are what Heifetz calls adaptive challenges. The problem I perceive in our political process is that we expect technical solutions to adaptive challenges. Adaptive challenges require new learning, and that requires asking questions and letting go of impossible quick fix solutions. Adaptive challenges require patience and time and require us to rethink our attitudes and behaviors and be open to the possibility of newness sparking up within our own souls, sometimes in the most unlikely places. Rather than expect a miracle solution from a new pastor, a new president, a new mayor, a new husband, new wife, whatever. What happened to Judaism was not a technical fix. The temple was not immediately, nor could it be immediately rebuilt, but rather the faith once centered in Jerusalem in the temple now gets dispersed and transformed into a faith that spread across the globe. And rather than being people of a place, a physical temple in Jerusalem, Judaism now becomes a people of the book and a people of the world. And you see how that tragedy gets transformed, not with a technical fix, but with an adaptive response. And what this says to me is that there may be newness coming to us through the work of God. But the newness often doesn't come in the ways that we had imagined. It may not be at all in continuity with what has been, and often that newness also is not without pain, loss, a period of despair, and allowing time and intentional movement toward healing to open our hearts and imaginations to new things being born that we wouldn't have imagined. We can easily get caught up in the promises made to fix things, promises made through politicians seeking office, through pastors and church leaders in anxious times, through parents wanting desperately to offer hope for the future to their children and grandchildren. But what Scripture, what experience and tradition teach us is that truly adaptive change happens not through quick technical fixes, through painful, often feeling like death, death to old dreams, death to our ways that we think are so right. For as Jesus said another time, unless a grain of wheat fall into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And I wonder today, where in my own life or in your life or circumstances could it be that there is a painful, though perhaps necessary, casting down and dismantling in order for some newness to come? Might such ending and such promise beginning be called the work of God in our lives? The most tragic thing that happens is when people lose any sense of hope. And as we will remember in just a few minutes as we move outside the Whitting Tree, we will remember that every day, 22 of our fellow Americans lose any hope and take their own lives. These are veterans. These are people like Glenn and would be friends of ours if we but knew them. And we might reflect on such a question personally. Pastorally, I've had the privilege of walking with people through loss. When sometime down the road they were able to make the change necessary to see God at work in that experience, bringing them to a new place of service or ministry or opportunity or growth. Of course, I try to be with people in their loss and pain, and not until they are ready to reflect do I begin to ask questions that might help them to make the adaptive change necessary to draw on that loss for something new. And we might also ask the same question for our country. Do our hopes for how change comes in our country need to die? I think so. We must stop pinning all of our hope on electing the right person, whoever that's right for us. We might rather engage and re-engage in our local communities and look for ways that we can be making a difference right around us. And as a church facing an uncertain future, we might also ask how we're being called to think new thoughts and adapt new attitudes and behaviors. And what might we be holding on to that we need to release so that something new might be born? And in any of these, in all of these, I don't have answers. Good leaders often don't have answers, but rather are holders of the questions and try to be with people in the anxiety and stay open to what the Spirit might be moving and how the Spirit might be moving among us to be part of the adaptive change. And this morning, I think we have a powerful example among us of adaptive change in Glenn and Mary Miller. Glenn, a Vietnam veteran, lived through and suffered the horror of that war. And Mary, since they're many years together now, has also stood by Glenn and has been with him in binding up the wounds, the soul wounds that are still present. And yet, years after that Vietnam experience, Glenn and Mary draw back on that experience to offer to other veterans hope and healing through the networks of support, of bringing people together to be able to name, for those people to name their pain and find healing and hope in supportive communities. And I've seen it happen as we sat in the circle. So I've asked Glenn and Mary to come and share a bit of their understanding of some of these things. And then at the end of our worship service, we'll be moving outdoors for hanging the dog tags, remembering the veterans that lose hope, and renewing our call to hope and to standing in solidarity. Glenn and Mary, welcome. Come share with us.